We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. Coming at you Monday morning, May 9th. We are in offseason mode here, I guess, in Timberwolves world. Kind of looking back at the season that was, looking forward to the season that the offseason that's coming. Today, to do that, I have Craig Kilborn joining me. Y'all know Craig from The Daily Show, SportsCenter, The Late Late Show. Craig, obviously, you're also a Minnesota native Timberwolves fan. How are you doing today?
Dane, I'm excited to do the show and talk hoop. I'm a fan of yours, and I appreciate your hard work. I've texted you that before. You're hardcore, man. And you go deep. I used to go deep in the NBA when I was growing up in Hastings. My father wanted us to play baseball. My brother and I, my dad was a Willie Mays fan, but we took to hoops. And I used to memorize the pro basketball handbook. I used to know every player in the NBA and their colleges. But I'm not as into the NBA quite as you are. I'm into the Timberwolves. But I'm hoping you can answer some of my questions today.
I think I can. What year would have this been when you had the handbook memorized?
Before I answer that, I have this thing on my screen. If I have this thing on my screen, does it go away? This meeting is being recorded. Do I just click on it or what happened?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, because I can't see myself, which completely throws me off. But that's okay. So I started playing basketball in second grade. My brother was 3 years ahead. Fifth grade is when organized ball started. And I was always very coordinated. I could always dribble the ball. And I had my growth spurt between fifth and sixth grade. I was 5'3 in fifth grade, and then I was 5'9 in sixth grade. And by the time I was in ninth grade, I was 6'4, and I guess I'm officially 6'5. But when I was in elementary school, we had to read Encyclopedia Brown and then Huck Finn and all that stuff. And I would read every pro basketball book I could. It was Zeke from Cabin Creek, the Jerry West story, the Houdini of the Hardwood, the Bob Cousy story, and then Foul, the Connie Hawkins story. So I want to ask you, I was obsessed with the NBA, still am, not quite to the extent when I was a kid, but are you just all Timberwolves all the time, which I think is a wonderful way to live. And I say that because someone told me Bill Cowher, when he coached the Steelers, he said, besides his family, all I care about is football and the 70s music I hear driving to practice. So are you addicted? Are you just, all you care about is the Wolves, right?
Honestly, man, I grew up much more just like an NBA fan. Like even when I was a kid, I think probably a lot of that started with like, you know, playing like basketball video games and stuff. And just, that was my way of learning the entire league. Right. And then, you know, all the players and the games are, you know, the games that are nationally televised and you know, all those guys. So I was much more into like the NBA at large. I've always kind of been that way with all sports than hyper-focused though. I have, you know, grown up in Minnesota. I was a kid during the KG you know, run and those days. So there was obviously the affinity there, but I think I really fell in love with the NBA, like broadly much deeper once the Wolves got really bad. And then it was, you know, you just kind of wanted to, I still followed the Wolves closely and those are, you know, those are your local broadcasts and that, but it was, you know, you wanted a little bit better basketball, right? Or I did. And so it was kind of more so both. I was kind of always that way with all sports. I'd never like maybe wanted too much. And so one team wasn't enough. But now, yes, that I cover this team professionally, but I still try and mix in a lot of just as much general NBA stuff as I can, because I think sometimes when you're really focused, if it's just the Timberwolves, right, you can learn a lot about the Timberwolves or how they can improve by watching what some of these other teams are doing, not just on the court, but how they're like strategies for building the roster and all those sort of things. So I think in today's day and age, like being you're a stronger team specific fan if you have like the awareness of the other 29 teams as well, because it all kind of feeds into each other.
Yeah, I as you know, I'm a huge Wolves fan. For they came into the league in 89 and my dad recorded the first game, but everything changed. And I think that was in 95. It was in 94, 95. KG was the fifth pick, but everything changed with KG. And I've told this brief story before, but years ago, maybe it was, you know, after KG, after the trade, maybe it was around 2008 or 2009. I live in LA and it's Saturday night and my buddy wants to go out, but he wants to start early at 5, which I prefer to start early because I get to bed early. And I said, I at 5, it's a 7 o'clock Wolves game in Minnesota. And he goes, no one in LA cares about this game, this Charlotte Minnesota game, but you. And it was the Randy Foy, Al Jefferson years. And I just had, I don't know what it is, man, but it's fun having a team. And yeah. I'm so proud to be from Minnesota. So I watch every game. And
but Craig, it's like the connection to the group. You like know that you're the crazy person there watching Randy Foy and Al Jefferson more likely than not lose. But you know that there's all these other people who have their friend who are telling them, why the hell are you watching a Charlotte Hornets Wolves game on a Tuesday? But that's what I think was the coolest part for me of this year, because I think we all knew that there was these little pockets of Wolves fans. Yeah. And now they actually had something to say, like, yes, I am watching the Wolves play the Charlotte Hornets and it's Anthony Edwards versus LaMelo Ball today. And I'm
right.
So excited to see that and how that plays out. And I think the most unique part of the Timberwolves fan base is that sort of bizarre tribalism of the group that I think is really cool.
I know we look the same age, but I think I'm older than you, but so we didn't have a pro basketball team growing up. And, you know, the Vikings, I know I'm a huge Vikings fan, but the Vikings were kind of the main thing. And they say it's a hockey state, but it's the Vikings. But we were obsessed, the basketball guys, with the Golden Gophers. And we, in the 70s, they had really good teams. And, you know, there was a guy named Ray Williams. He was Gus Williams' younger brother. He played at the University of Minnesota. He played in the NBA. And he was one of my favorite players. And obviously you had Michael Thompson. I wore 43. My brother wore 43. I wore it in college because of Michael Thompson at the University of Minnesota. You had McHale. So that was our pro basketball team, were the Golden Gophers. And now, and so what I'm saying is there have always been basketball fans in Minnesota, always.
100%. And we, again, I think we saw them out. You were here for, was it game 3 and 4?
Three and four.
And I thought that was just awesome, particularly that game 4, which was the 9 o'clock start. You probably had a later bedtime that evening, but that place was Jay, it was just so cool, man. It was just so cool to be, the amount of games I've sat in there where it's not that at all, was you just kind of have that memory of the kind of quiet hush at 7 o'clock normally to just sort of a drunken roar at 9 p.m. for game 4. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, that it is weird because I do seriously for years go to bed at 9 p.m. fall asleep at 9 p.m. I I get into bed and watch something. I'll watch Bosch or Bosch Legacy, which just dropped last week on Amazon. But I'll watch different movies or pro basketball. But I actually sleep at 9 p.m., which throws people off. But that was a late start. It was hot in there. I was wearing a cashmere zip-up sweater, and my forehead was sweating. And I got out of there about after midnight, maybe 12:15. It was magical. I'm so happy for Timberwolves fans. You know, because I do think I'm able to distance myself from the team living far away where, you know, I want to be honest, Dane, over the years, I watch the games, but I do sometimes turn them off when they're down 20, and then I'll follow on the computer. I'll come back in the fourth, but I've been through so many losses. And when you say, you know, Randy Foy and Al Jefferson, they probably lost that game. The weird thing was they were in the game in the fourth quarter. They were close. They lost it, but I always loved it when they were in the game on the road. My favorite thing in the Wolves winning on the road is like my favorite thing in the world. But games 3 and 4, obviously 3 was a debacle, but just the whole playoff experience. I wasn't at the Clipper game. Were you at the Clipper game? That had to be outrageous.
The Clipper game, that was very similar to game 4. And I mean, just,
right.
I don't know. Can you say there was more at stake in that game too, in a way? And you could kind of feel the desperation of that. And yeah, I mean, as much as everybody got, or like the Wolves got clowned for the way they celebrated there, like for the 20,000 people who were, the 20,000 people who were in that stadium, like that night for that. Very similar to, was it like game 163 when the Twins, it was like a one game playoff to make it. And I remember in my mind, I have like a memory of the players like running around the stadium, high-fiving the fans like that. It was that. And you know what, whatever anybody in Atlanta or whatever wants to say about it, for the people who were there, like, I don't know. In all seriousness, I think it created like a new sort of generation of Wolves fans.
Yeah, I thought, as far as the over celebration, which I obviously disagree with and could care less with the guy, you know, Barkley, they're trying to poke fun and all this stuff and trying to be funny. I thought it was mostly Pat Bev because it was personal with the Clippers. I thought he was the guy that was celebrating the most. And then, you know, Ant stood up and I could care less. That's great. I mean, it was, I did this. I said, without thinking, after the game, I posted, I made a comment somewhere on Instagram that that's one of the greatest games in Timberwolves history without analyzing it. And then I saw Jim Suhan wrote an article saying it was the number one game because he had the KG game 7 playoff game against the Kings. Now, I did want to ask you, and you might agree with me and you don't have to, but this past season was the most magical since 2004, which means I'm skipping the Jimmy Butler playoff season, which I found very frustrating, even though we were playing well. But I liked Jimmy at the time. I was ecstatic when we got him. It's so hard to get talent up in Minnesota. But there were problems with him in the fourth. I wanted Cat to get the ball, and Jimmy would monopolize the ball, dribble down the shot clock, and it wasn't cohesive. And we found out why. You know, he wanted to leave. But I, you know, that game against Denver to get in was huge.
Yeah.
But I did think the Clipper game was the one of, you know, top two greatest, along with KG's game 7.
Yeah. No, I would rank those both below. I think game 82, that had a similar at Target Center vibe and energy to it. But then I think that once we got to that series, like you kind of said, I mean, part Jimmy monopolizing the offense and part, you know, Houston was doubling Cat, and Cat didn't score very much in those first games. And it kind of felt like a grinding of the gears to even sort of get through that series in a way. And maybe we all felt something was coming without necessarily knowing exactly what it was. But I mean, that was my first year covering the team. And obviously this is my most recent, and you could, I mean, night and day difference of not just those big games, but the experience of every day. It was, even for me, I mean, just a more joyful experience. And that's about the players. That's about the coach, and that's about the fan base. It just, I think Tibbs as a personalities of coaches to fans, I think really matters, and like the way in which they connect. And I think Tibbs's personality actually kind of fit Chicago in a way, and it didn't in Minnesota. But with Chris Finch, I think that was one of the more pleasant surprises of the year. Not just that he's a great coach, but his personality seems to fit Minnesota. And I think you see people latching onto him in ways similar that they latch onto an Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I the thing with the Wolves is it's always been tough to get talent up there. So when you had KG, it was tough for free mm-hmm. agents to come. Same with Cat. It's hard to get people up there. Mm-hmm. And then when they got Tibbs as a coach, I was like, wow,
right.
this makes us legit. And of course I wanted him gone because he was a sourpuss and he bothered me. He had no personality. I liked him with the Bulls a lot.
Right.
And he said something, it would always drive me up the wall. He would say simple comments. We'd lose a game. Dane, we would lose a game in the fourth when the offense shut down. And he would just say, defense, defense, defense. And obviously defense wins championship. We have to play defense. But there are times when the other team is red hot and you better keep up or you're out of the game. So the offense cannot shut down. You have to play defense, but good offense beats good defense. And there are times when the other team is going to score and you better keep up. So it would drive me up the wall when he would never talk about the offense. He would just say defense. We got to play better defense. He's being simplistic. So that, anyways, I love Finchy like everybody. I do have questions for you. I have so many thoughts. I hope I'm organized, sir.
You are, of course. Fire away.
Can I hit you?
Fire away.
So we love Finchy. We love his offense. And there is a concern. You know, he has this motion offense. He's supposed to be an offensive savant. And then my concern is, well, how is this going to work in the playoffs? Because it's a knockdown, drag out, slowdown. You may have to make adjustments. And I was concerned about our offense in the playoffs. But I guess the most obvious question, and I don't want to put pressure on you. I'm treating you like an expert because you watch film and you do stuff that I don't do anymore. I used to watch film in fifth grade. No, why don't they? We know that Cat has an automatic jump hook, and we do know there. Why don't they post him up low block and he gets double teamed? Why is it so evil that he gets double teamed there as opposed to double teamed at the top of the key? Why don't they even try to post Cat up in the low block, sir?
I think the biggest factor of it is he struggles to get that deep position, right? I mean, we started seeing some of that in this Philly series with Embiid. And I mean, and part of it is on Cat. You know, you got to do your work early, as they say, like get to the block, seal, all those sort of things. But when teams try to do that against Joel Embiid, it's very different because he's weighs, I don't know, 60 pounds more, 50 pounds more than Cat does. So to have that position, I think that's, if the Wolves do want to go to Cat in the post more often, it's going to be about him getting deeper position and holding it there. Because, yeah, like you said, then if he's there, he can rip through, get to the jump hook like right away. But if that catch happens at 16 feet and then the double comes, now what do you can basically only pass it or try and shoot over a double team at 16 feet. I mean, Cat's a great shooter, but you know, that's a bit of a problem. And I think part of what Cat always wrestled with there is he is such a great shooter that he goes, well, I don't care if you give it to me at 6 feet or 16 feet, like I can make this shot. And I think he's going to have to fight with that a little bit too. And part of it, Craig, is like the other four guys need to make it so you can't double Cat and you can't punish him. Like Denver, right? When they double Jokic, Denver's like, yes, please. You know, we'll pick this apart with passing and that sort of way. And so Cat actually has some skills that Embiid and Jokic don't have. So if he can get that position there and he can become a better passer, like there is a way where he can offensively profile as a similar caliber center in that sort of way. But I share your frustration particularly in that one game where they remember when the Grizzlies went super small, they had Brandon Clark at center, who's like 6'8". Dylan Brooks was guarding Cat, 6'4". And that was tough in game three because, you know, you just saw Cat kind of going to the, they'd kind of waved the white flag on the idea of even posting him up. And they try to get him at the elbow, the nail, those sort of things. But yeah, eventually they're going to have to go back to that because that's been a profit. Like you said, that's been a profitable thing for, he was a dominant post-up center when he was playing for Tibbs, you know? So you got to be able to go back to that. You got to have a lot of shooters around him, cutters that can be able to punish those double teams. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. But I didn't write down. I should have written down my, I'm just going to say them out loud. Hopefully we'll get to all of them. I do want to talk, since we're on Cat, I want to tell you my thoughts on Cat, his improvements, and see what you think. I had messaged you about D'Lo, and I wanted to talk about D'Lo. You mentioned Clark. The other frustration thing I have, and I know that I've met the two owners, and I have access to talk to them. I won't abuse that privilege. But I had mentioned to one of them when we were grabbing a bite with a group of people, I don't like all the mistakes in the draft. So we can talk about that later. I know all teams do, but, you know, Chris Dunn over Jamal Murray. I mean, there are too many to mention. But going back to Cat, so my favorite stat, for whatever reason, in the NBA is field goal percentage. I'm fascinated. I love that Sam Cassell shot over 47%. I just like field goal percentage. I don't know why. So Cat shoots 54 this first 3 years, and I am stunned, and I love it, and we're blessed to have him. Now, one of the issues, though, he is such a good shooter. I sometimes think he drives too much. He's so aggressive. And when you drive, you can get hurt. You can get an offensive foul. You can obviously score and get fouled, draw fouls on other people. But he's automatic from 15. He's automatic everywhere, except he doesn't do what Jokic can do, where he doesn't really back a guy down and shoot a jumper. He plays around with his one-footed Dirk thing, but he doesn't have that back-down turnaround much. He might want to work on that because he seems to have every other shot in the book. I'm a huge Cat fan. I do believe I knew you could take him out of a game. I saw it against the Houston series. We saw it against the Clippers. It's just, it's just easier to take seven-footers out because they can't yo-yo and dance out on the perimeter and get around it and get the ball back. But I love Cat. I am concerned. I don't know psychologically. I don't know if he's ever going to get over the foul thing. I don't know if he, because that's the biggest complaint. I talk to people and I just say, I don't know. He's weird. He's a whiner like Luka. And I don't know if he's going to, I was sitting there right at courtside under the basket when he went for an offensive rebound with his left hand and pulled the guy at, a little bit down at his waist. And he got called for his fifth foul. And he went, what did you do? And I think he thought the ref couldn't see the little, I think he does little grabs and he thinks no one saw that. No, we all saw it, Cat. You know, very frustrating.
Yeah, it was on John Morant. I remember that. Yeah. Craig, we're approaching something with Carl where you can't not be sort of scared that it's going to be like DeMarcus Cousins and it's a permanent thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think we're, like I said, I think we're approaching that. I don't know if we're there yet. But that's concerning because that is something baked into DeMarcus's Cousins' DNA, right? He's 31 years old now. It's been every year of his career. And Kat's younger than that. And Cat is physically more talented than DeMarcus is. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's like a mental rewiring sort of thing. And I mean, we can all say that. I certainly say it. You just said it, that we say that does need to change. But you know, we all have these things in us that are baked into our DNA that we need to rewire at it, that are, you know, bad things. And and it's, I think it's tough because it's an aesthetically, you know, not appealing thing that he does that kind of drags down all the aesthetically and statistically, you know, great things that I find myself going like, okay, Dane, like you're only going on the left side here of these are the problems, when the right side is treasure too. But right. that's also part of becoming, you know, a star player or a superstar player in the league is it's not what all the great things you can do are. It's what more great things can you have.
So I always mentioned Tim Duncan because I was a huge fan of his. Now he did have one flaw, which was the 66% free throw shooting. So a lot of guys have flaws. Do you remember the criticism KG took when he was with the Wolves?
Yeah. It was pass first, right?
Yeah, I think he was such a great perimeter defender because he's kind of narrow. His build is narrow, but that hurt him in the low post. They wanted him to be Duncan in the low post. They wanted him to post up and be dominant. And there was this big argument on TNT once when John Thompson was there and Danny Ainge, they're both working for TNT. And they were saying, one guy was saying, I think both those two guys, I think, were defending KG. It was a playoff series against Dallas. And they go, that's not KG's game. He just isn't going to post up. Like, Dirk didn't go down to the low block and post up. Some of these guys, that's not their game. So Cat's problem is different. And he's got to figure that out. And I don't want to dwell on it because we've said it.
Man.
But he has a problem. I am.
No, but Craig, it's like you could look at it glass half full too. What if he does figure it out? That's what I always think about is what if that is just resolved? And I don't know how to resolve that, rewire that, whatever it is. But if it is, I mean, that's one of the best players in the league.
Yeah. And I do. And I think I said it already. I'm a huge Cat fan. I am stunned by how great soft his touch is, feathery soft touch.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised when a three pointer doesn't go in. And I want to move off of him, except I want to say one other criticism I have, which he's toned down, is those crazy whip passes out of the double team.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's worked on that. And the thing is with the NBA, like one of my favorite players was Dwayne Wade, and he would turn the ball over. And I don't like turnovers. My other thing, I don't like turnovers. I like field goal percentage, and I like low turnovers. But D Wade would try to cut the double team and take risks by dribbling between the double team and lose the ball. So I don't like turnovers.
Today's show is sponsored by Aura. You know of Aura because you've seen their name on the Timberwolves jerseys, and I'd like to tell you what Aura's digital security can do for you. Aura is identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software, all combined into one easy-to-use app. People are shocked when their identity is stolen, but identity theft is actually extremely common. There's a new victim of identity theft every 14 seconds. Aura monitors the dark web for your emails, passwords, and social security numbers, and sends alerts fast right to your phone and email. When it comes to fraud, every second matters. Can connect your credit and bank accounts and get notified of any changes up to 4 times faster than Aura's competitors with Aura. I've already signed up for Aura and I'm already seeing how often my personal information is showing up on the dark web. And you will too if you sign up for a free 14-day trial with Aura. Protect yourself from America's fastest growing crime by trying 14 days for free at aura.com/Dane. That's aura.com/Dane. For 14 days free. And a thank you to Aura for sponsoring today's show. Aura, digital security you can trust.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The elephant in the room for me, and I'm going to just jump into it, and I want you to, this is where I want to ask you, is this was a magical year. I wanted, you know, the Vegas said 34 wins. I wanted 42 because I wanted to go 42-40, have a winning record as opposed to 41-41. And we got 46. I even said to myself, and you can disagree, if we lost to the Clippers and if we somehow didn't get in the play-in, it was still, I was still happy with the season. But I want to talk about the pressure for next year. The honeymoon is over and the other teams are going to be healthier and it's going to be harder to make the playoffs. And I want to talk about personnel changes, sir. So
do you have a specific area? Do you want to just do the D'Lo thing?
I got power. Well, I want two new starters on the team at point guard and at power forward. If you want, that's the initial thing. I was looking at the free agency list, and now if someone said, "Well, we're gonna get Bradley Beal," and we're, I mean, I'm open to other things, but that's mainly I wanted a power forward. And before I forget, we'll get to D'Lo. I have a really important question for you. Can Cat play with a center? Is, you know, Anthony Davis gets to play with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard. I assume it's because on the perimeter, Anthony Davis is a better defender than Cat on the perimeter. I assume that's what it is. But I just looked at the free agency, and there are some centers that are decent. And what do you think of Cat playing with a center?
Yes, I personally have guessed he always could. And part of that was just, you know, he kind of struggled in rib protection, struggled in drop coverage over those, you know, over those Tibbs years. And part of this, the thing is, Craig, he's not huge. I mean, he's like modern day center size. We can, like, you've seen these guys in Joel Embiid, Cat, not even close. Jokic is way bigger than Cat. A lot of these centers, the best centers in the league, are bigger than Cat. So that is one reason that, you know, you could say this is, he could be a big power forward. But he also showed this year that he can guard on the perimeter. That was the defensive plan all season, was bring Cat up to level. We don't want him to be playing in that drop, being the main rim protector on every single possession. And here we are, like, the under Tibbs, I think they were 25th in defense. This year, they were 13th in defense. It worked in a team concept. And Cat individually, that is the biggest thing that got as many people crapped on Cat during the that playoff series. He was excellent in all six of those games when he was in coverage, you know, stifling Ja Morant out on the perimeter. Like, that's why Ja Morant is doing what he's doing in this series and wasn't in the previous series. It wasn't just Cat. They were showing two up there. But, yes, Cat has shown that. I had a big frustration during the Rosa's regime of, like, you know, the team stunk. So I was like, why don't we experiment a little bit? Like, how about we just a body? Like, bring in a 6'11", 7-foot, 240-pound guy. Let's just try and see what it looks like if Cat is the four. And this, we're just testing stuff out anyways. And I had a big frustration that that didn't happen. So we come into this year, and you couldn't really know. You couldn't really know if Cat could play the four. Right. I think right now, today, we have more evidence that suggests he can than we ever did before.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's 36 minutes a game.
Yeah,
I'm saying it's part of the game because I like him under the. I always thought he was a good shot blocker, and I've always known when it counts, he's a really good rebounder on the defensive boards. But so that being said, I know that they talked about Miles Turner, which I thought would have been really good. Do you have names of guys that you want? I'm looking at my list here. Do you have names of guys?
Well, it's just kind of interesting when you talk about, like, because it could be a power forward that you get, but if it's a power forward, then you probably want that guy to be a rim protector. So that's a certain type of power forward. I think Miles Turner checks both the boxes where he's big and he's that rim protector. There's other guys out there this summer. Thad Young is a free agent. He's more of the power forward mold.
Right.
I think I think a team to look at for the Wolves making moves this summer is the Knicks. And I think if you try and make a short list of, or just any list of teams that might be interested in D'Angelo Russell, I think they would be on that list. And I think, I mean, he makes a lot of money. So you're not going to be getting, like, what you're going to be getting back is expensive players that probably won't be great players. And I think with them, Nerlens Noel is that type of center. And that just kind of classic rim protector. He's kind of like Vanderbilt, but he is bigger in that way. It doesn't have the motor quite that Vando does, but has more of the shot blocking chops and that. So I think a basic framework for a D'Angelo Russell trade, if we do want to go down that path, is Nerlens Noel and Evan Fournier. I know that doesn't sound all that sexy. And maybe there's got to be some assets attached onto that, but that's kind of like, if you do want to move on from D'Angelo Russell, I don't think the way you should be thinking about it, you or fans, is you're going to get a one-for-one replacement. Can you trade D'Angelo Russell and get somebody else back that checks one of these other needs that we say, a power forward or center? And I think Nerlens Noel would be an option there. I think Fournier kind of then becomes your Malik Beasley. And then maybe it's Malik Beasley who you trade for a Miles Turner or somebody else along those lines. It's honestly, Craig, it's a difficult like way to really think about what the mechanics of these moves would be to get these players. But I think the good news is I feel like they could take a few different paths. It doesn't have to be a center. It doesn't have to be a power forward.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a point guard. Like those are all different paths that you can go down. So if you're Sasha Gupta, you know, you can whiteboard it out like, okay, here's option 1, 2, 3, you know, so on. So that's a way I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Because, and the reason I pressure you is because, there are certain things I don't do with the NBA. I don't really follow the contracts too much and the money and the trade machine. Let me say the D'Lo thing is, so I wanted Wiggins traded. I don't know who in the world would take his max contract. Obviously it drives me up the wall. We had to attach a first round pick. I want to tell people I like D'Lo more as a, there's this term I use when I say my dad and I used to do this, guy's a ball player. Means he has a floor game. That usually means he can dribble and pass. Mm-hmm. So as much as I love Vando's energy and rebounding, and he's very valuable, you know, when he gets the ball in offense, I'm afraid he's going to turn it over. He's not a passer. So D'Lo can pass. I like his game. I don't consider Wiggins a ball player because he's not a good ball handler or passer. But I wanted him out. I like D'Lo. I'm weird because I was a stylish 6'5 player who wasn't the most athletic, very coordinated, so D'Lo is not athletic and he's crafty. And when he's on, it's fun because he shoots a high arc and he pulls up from where he's not supposed to. That's fun, but we're trying to win games here. So I decided, you know, a year ago, I said, this guy's not long-term. He's not the long-term answer. He's a max player, not the guy. And I know that people in the organization, I'm sure you have information. They're not so keen on him. So his attitude. So he's too cool for school, you know, dresses very well, by the way, Dane, very well, but I care about him. Because I always think of myself as an NBA fan first, because I was an NBA fan for 20 years before the Wolves came into the league. I was obsessed with a guy named Julius Dr. J. Irving. That was everyone thinks I was a Larry Bird fan. Love Larry. Got to meet him and chit-chat with him once. Ask him every question I wanted to ask him about his finger, breaking his finger in softball. I just want to tell you this. This is so funny. He broke his... This is the one he's pointed when he won the three-pointer. It's all crooked, his shooting hand.
Yeah.
And he says, his friend said, yeah, he shot pretty well in the NBA. This is his friends back in Indiana State. He shot well in the NBA. You should have seen him at college before he broke his finger. Didn't miss. He was never as pure with a broken hand. But so I was a Dr. J fan. Where was I? I was talking about D'Lo. So he's stylish, but it's time for him to move on. And I think it's not the same as Wiggins because he has an expiring max contract, right? So that's easier. And but then that's why I messaged you. I don't know who's out there. Who are the, like, here's what I don't know. Nash was drafted. Steve Nash was drafted 15th. Stockton was drafted 16th in the first round. Nash was 15th, but he was a backup to Jay Kidd at Phoenix. And then Dallas gets him. So my first question is, not now, you can research this, is are there any point guards who are backups that should be starters?
Tyus
because
Jones.
I look, no, I'm sorry. He's not a starter. He's not a starter. I looked at the free agency list and I saw the guards. No one really appeals to me. And people will say, what about
it is, Brunson? We should say it is not a great, like if you do what Craig's done and I did it this morning too, if you look at just the free agent list, not great. It's
correct.
Except it's for probably going to be a trade.
Except for centers. I like Zubac. I like the Clipper center. I like Bobby Portis. So I consider him a forward, but they say center. I like Nurkic and I like Ayton. But so those are the ones I wrote down. I like Malcolm Brogdon. I don't know enough about Shai Alexander at OKC because I like guys that pass really well. You know, I was a Ricky Rubio fan. I don't want to bring him back. I think that time that I don't think that's right. I love Ricky. There's something special. There's something good vibes with Ricky. Yeah. He's you know what I'm saying? He's special. I don't think he's the answer, but I wouldn't totally rule it out if we get some superstars up power forward or something like that. But I like, so I guess one of my questions was, am I missing anything? Are there any backup point guards that should be starters? And Tyus, as much as I love him, and he is a ball player, he's the heady ball player. Mm-hmm. Like he's like J-Mac, you know, J-Mac is special. He's not a starter. So who is this starter going to be? And is it going to be in the draft, which again is a crapshoot for me because I don't know these point guards. I look some of them up, you know, I look some of the guys who are the top point guards in the draft. But we need a point guard, and I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote some down, and I don't think if Tyus Jones doesn't get you going, I don't think the other guys will either. I mean, Rubio is one as well.
Right. I prefer Rubio over Tyus.
Yeah. Dennis Schroeder, he's kind of dithered recently. I wrote down DeLon Wright's kind of that from Atlanta, and Aaron Holiday, a little bit more the defensive mold. But I don't think those guys are what you're describing, which is a guy who is clearly a backup right now that could come in, is just waiting for the opportunity to be a starter.
Right. And they may not exist. I mean, I want a Mike Conley type. I mean, and I looked up, Mike Conley was, I think, a top five pick. I think he was three. Yep. So I get such a joy when you're able to get Jaden McDaniels in the draft or Manu Ginobili in the second round. But and Nashie went 15 in Stockton. Oh, can I tell you a quick Stockton story?
Oh, John Stockton story? Yes, please.
I'm at Montana State. I was recruited to play two guard. But I was recruited by both Montana State and Montana, which is up in Missoula. And the coach in Missoula was Mike Montgomery, who coached at Stanford and then Cal.
Yeah.
And we got, unfortunately, Montana State somehow beat out Montana for this guy, Jeff Epperly, the top Montana player, who's a friend of mine. It was my roommate. He is a 6'4 white guy, kind of like a Rex Chapman.
Okay.
And so they had to play him over me. So I played small forward. I had my best games at point guard. And I could handle, I was 6'5. I was like a poor man's pistol. I joked that I wasn't interested in defense or the defensive stance hurt my lower back, but I could scoop pass and I could shoot. But anyway, that wasn't my story. I apologize. So we're playing Gonzaga.
Okay.
And the assistant coach on Montana State, it's their job to scout the other team. And in the locker room before the game, they write down the five starters on Gonzaga. And they do a profile each one. This guy, this power forward, can't shoot. Keep him off the boards. All he wants to do is crash. Then it gets down to Stockton. And he says, okay, the guy, John Stockton, he's one of the top point guards on the West Coast, along with Leon Wood from Cal State Fullerton. He's got pretty good quicks. He's about as quick as you, Jeff. That was our athletic two guard. We had a black point guard named Tony Hampton from Portland, who was 6'1". He couldn't bring the ball up against Stockton.
Wow.
And after the game, pretty good quicks. We just mocked the coach's scouting report. He's got pretty good quicks. He was cat quick. I think, you know, Stockton has really long arms and big hands and strong hands. And the quickest guy on our team couldn't bring the ball up against him. It was hilarious. Anywho, I don't know who our point guard's going to be, but I know I want him to be like Jordan McLaughlin. I want him to be a heady player, a smart player, a trustworthy player who passes. I'm being greedy here, and I don't know who that player is.
Yeah.
I would take Malcolm Brogdon. He's not the passer I want. I always think he's such a great shooter. I assume he's a decent defender. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are you thinking for point guard?
Yeah, I think it would be like the trade market where you would need to go get someone like Malcolm Brogdon. And then now we're all complicated. Are you trading Malik Beasley? How many picks are you attaching and all that sort of thing. I think one name to throw out for you that I am almost sure the Wolves name will be attached to in pursuing him in free agency is Zach LaVine. And I don't think that is, Zach is not your traditional point guard at all, right? But you do have Ant, who I think is going to take up more and more lead ball handling duties as his, career sort of blooms. And if he's playing with a lower usage point guard, someone like Jordan McLaughlin rather than D'Angelo Russell, you're going to see Ant kind of expand that. So I do think it could be somebody like Brogdon or like Zach LaVine who, isn't necessarily a traditional point guard, and your point guard tandem ends up kind of like Luka is the point guard of Dallas, and now they start Brunson. But for the most part, they during Luka's career, there hasn't been your traditional one next to him. So I think, I don't know if that's this summer, but eventually it might end up being where your quote unquote point guard isn't, your traditional point guard. And the Zach LaVine thing, I'm not saying that will happen. That would be a massive sort of move and money. I mean, he's eligible to make like $40 million a year signing his a new deal. But I do, if we're just throwing names out there that might kind of get a nibble, at least on Twitter and such, of so-and-so is connected to, I would assume the Timberwolves will have a connection there. He's clutch, same agency as Anthony Edwards, the new Marquise Watts, who they brought in to be the new chief experience officer, has connections. They worked for Clutch as recently as like a month ago. So, I mean, what's going to be for you, for Wolves fans everywhere, is like the Wolves, when big player names are out there, and Mark and Alex, like they're going to dip their feet in the water and see how these things, kind of feel, rather than throwing out, DeLon Wright and Dennis Schroeder, names like that. That's not going to get them going.
And I just wanted to say, I don't know DeLon Wright's game. And I also don't know Shea Alexander's game well enough. I don't know Shea's if Shea awesome. Can pass. Yeah, I know he can drive. And can he pass or not? I mean, is there just more of a...
I would say shooting is his...
Right.
Like, if as far as like the all three skills, driving best, I think he can pass. Kind of like a Ja Morant shooter, where he's going to shoot him, but, he's to use your field goal percentage, it's not going to be 40%.
Right. So here's my... I don't want to disappoint people out there. This is where I have to recuse myself. And if I was a GM, I would think differently as opposed to being a fan. I'm really proud of Zach and what he's done in Chicago. And I like the fact that he's a much purer shooter. He shoots a high percentage. I wasn't a fan of his floor game.
Yeah.
It was a debacle when he played point. That wasn't his thing. Bad turnovers. So, And I want to say something. Ant's not a good enough passer for me. The one thing I'll say about Ant that no one talks about is his handle is off the charts. I can't believe what a gifted ball handler he is. He can yo-yo and do all this stuff, and no one talks about it. It's like, do you see what he's doing with the ball right there? He's he's like so good before he drives. but his passing is decent, but he makes some bonehead passes. So I'm talking a pure point guard. And again, they're not out there necessarily.
Well, maybe it's J-Mac. Maybe it's just J-Mac.
Yeah, but he's, you know, and I like him. He's not a starter, in my opinion.
What if he's the fifth starter?
You take you can take advantage of him and post his ass up and all that. But there is a scenario where you're saying what you were saying is, you know, the great Celtic team was Danny Ainge and Dennis Johnson, and those neither of those they had a forward who could pass pretty well, but they weren't true point guards, either of them. So you could do that by default. I mean, you could play Pat Bev and J-Mac together, I guess. But I'm trying to unrealistically build a team, and I'm trying to get.
Craig, it could. I mean, we're like we've like shipped D'Lo off in this conversation. Like, it's no guarantee that he's gone, right? You know, he might be the point guard again next year. And I think, like you said, I don't know if anyone thought he was a long-term solution. I think they thought he would be here through the extent of this contract.
Right.
But you know, now he's up for an extension right now. And so that makes it kind of complicated. And yes, the deal is not officially over yet, but in his mind, he's looking for his, where he's going to get his next deal and where, what his future is going to be financially and what city he's going to be living in. And that very well, you know, could be Minnesota. There's a case to be made that you could do things around D'Lo that empower him more to make him, you know, a stronger, more consistent offensive player.
Yeah, and I wanted to see if I made sense. Even though you might say you could say Andrew Wiggins is a better player certainly this year, I like D'Lo's game.
I do too.
It's time, and I thought his defense was. I was stunned. I thought his defense was improved. I love his passing. And initially I thought he turned the ball over too much when he first got here. I go, oh my God, he crumbles when he's double teamed, but he did pretty well. But I just think he's a max player. What's going to happen, in my opinion, is if they make an offer, it'll be, you know, whatever it is in the $12 million range, and his people will decline, but I don't think they want him here. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know who the point guard is, but we've exhausted that, I think. it's a thing where we do have to. These are the things I do where I go, okay, who's it going to be? Yeah. And I don't know. Are you a college guy? Because are there college guards, or you don't follow college hoops because it's boring?
Honestly, I kind of try to dig into it now.
Right.
Well, typically, you know, the Wolves are done by like April 8th or whatever, so that I got, yeah, you know, a couple months to the draft this year,
right?
You know, didn't have that. I mean, I think even if it was the draft and you were looking for that in the draft and it was a better pick, it's just rare that guys can come in and immediately be
right,
give you
right,
what you want them to be, right? And
yeah,
and the Wolves,
yeah,
are in this place of less patience now where if you're trying to like place one of your starters, you want to have a real belief in them right now. And
right,
if it ends up, you know, if you draft someone and you're like, oh, he's our plan at starting point guard, and it ends up being a Jarrett Culver situation over again, you know, now, and you've traded D'Angelo Russell, now that's going to cost you big time. And now
right,
maybe you're not doing the thing where you're progressing, you know, linearly and, or even getting back to 45, 46 wins again. So I am not considering the draft that much for immediate. I'm honestly considering the draft much more for trade purposes. They got the 19th pick and 3 second round picks. I think with that, I mean, Malik Beasley had a great second half of the season, and that maybe means you should just keep him. But now what if you attach that 19th overall pick to Malik Beasley? That's a pretty nice package for a team. I would be attracted to that if
right,
I was a team like having that come in. So a lot more of the way I'm going to be thinking about the offseason a lot more is through the trade lens, which is so much more complicated and oftentimes
right,
just fictional. But it just, given these lack of free agent options at point guard, and given how I just don't think you want to bank on the draft for an immediate I don't know. I'm really gonna be thinking about stuff much more through the trade lens this summer.
If you don't want the Wolves to stand pat, do you?
No, I don't think you can.
Right.
I think at a minimum, like let's just say D'Lo's here, you gotta do something else at power forward. Not because I mean Vando did everything he could this year.
Right.
It's just you got to get Cat back on the block to some extent. You've got to make him so he's not exclusively a passer because he's getting double teamed. And the best way to do that would be that he's not playing 20 plus minutes a game next to Jared Vanderbilt. That they right. just the book's out now where teams are going to float off of Vando and bring the double on Cat. So I think like this isn't pejorative to Vando. Like I think he'd be an awesome first big off the bench. Just,
yeah,
you know,
totally
you're 8 minutes
agree.
Into the game and just right. fire that up and send him out. Yeah. And that could be next to Cat, you know, and then you're playing him next to Cat for like 2 minutes before Cat subs out in like in the rotation. It's not like he can't ever play next to Cat. It's just, I think we're all in agreement that if you're trying to go up higher and progress as a team, that's a pretty easy adjustment is to slide Vando to the bench.
The only reason I bring up Zubats is because I looked this morning and I saw he was maybe it's a team option, but
that guy's not going to call. Non-guaranteed contract or something like that, but yeah.
Now, when I've seen him play, I've always been impressed. So
I like Zubats.
I mean, what do you think of him next to Cat?
Yeah, now, I mean, the thing
I
is, yeah, it's just that the big body center, which I feel like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, which we're saying, oh, you need that for Cat. You need that for rebounding and defense and all that. But they played such a small brand of fast, quick basketball,
right.
but particularly on defense, right? Just scrambling all over the place. Zubats
right.
can't do that. So if you want to go with the Zubats type archetype of big, then you're making a pretty drastic change to your style of play.
Okay, that's
and
what I was wondering. Yeah.
And I don't think Finch wants to do that. Now Finch he's ran every single thing in the book in his career. He's had a million different types of rosters. He could do it, but I think this is his preference of style of play, right? Scramble on defense, ball movement flow on offense.
Right.
That's what he wants to have. And I think he can make it work with different types of rosters, but going with a big body like Zubats would be a pretty drastic stylistic change.
Well, the other thing is, you know, it helps in what I don't know if it's a limited number of games when you play Embiid. You know, Cat, I just want some beef next to Cat on occasion, but then of course in the playoffs you saw with the Grizz, they didn't even play Steven Adams anymore.
Right.
So and then sometimes you wouldn't even play Zubats. But I just didn't think he would be expensive, but he would be valuable. But I know what you're saying. I don't know who the I guess my whole thing is I want you to tweet out options throughout the summer. I just need you and podcast. You need to talk and come up with these guys. Because I was fired up when I heard Miles Turner. I said, oh, my Lord. I thought Miles
I still
Turner,
think that's one people should be fired up about.
Yeah.
I mean, because Craig, he can play all the different ways defensively. Like, he can be your rim protector. I think he can get out and switch. I think he could play this scrambling style that Finch had this year.
Right.
I mean, and he can shoot. Like,
yeah.
It'd be real perfect.
I saw Finch, he interviewed about something about that preseason. And he said, there aren't that many of those guys out there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're doing is like, I'm hitting a dead end with some of the point guards that I want. You know, I can't find, I want Mike Conley when he was 26, you know,
that's what
I mean, I'm being greedy here. I'm so grateful we have Ant and Kat. And I also just talking about Ant, we know his age. I thought he'd take a more of a jump this year than he did, but I'm being greedy. And then when he had those two games, the one against the Clippers and the first one against the Grizz, we were like, oh my Lord. And then he settled back into good, not great.
Right.
So I want more consistency.
Does bandwidth, do you think if he has more bandwidth, that would happen more often? Like he played
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, he's played a ton of his minutes next to both Cat and D'Lo. He played, I think, 80% of his minutes next to Cat, which is a ton. Remember how D'Lo would kind of be like the first guy off the bench, and then it'd be D'Lo out there with like Jaden and Prince and J-Mac and whatever. I'd be interested in seeing Ant more in that role where it's like, this is you. Like, you got the space to kind of do whatever you want with this group, or just kind of like little rotation combinations that give him a little bit more space. Because I think sometimes those lulls that you talk about, some of that's on him for sure. I like hold him accountable for that, where he's 20. I think he kind of attentiveness comes and goes, but he's always attentive when you give him the ball, you know?
Right.
And I think that's one of the cases again, for if not this summer, eventually moving on from D'Lo or that type of really high usage point guard next to him, because you don't got to go all the way like full Luka or Russell Westbrook back in OKC with him, but a little bit more over time from Ant, I'd like to see.
Right. Yeah. It is a thing where Cat, you know, the Wolves score a lot in the first quarter, and Cat usually dominates the first quarter.
Yep.
He just gets going. And so Ant takes a back seat. I wanted to say something. You just reminded me. When the offense shuts down, the easiest thing, I used to see Chauncey Billups do this with Denver in the playoffs. You know, when two teams can't score, Chauncey, and the game we lost when we gave up the 26-25 point lead, Pat Bev did it once in the fourth. He tried it twice. He just drove and got fouled to get free throws.
Yeah.
When the offense shuts down and you have a point guard who can penetrate, it changes everything. And I'm saying J-Mac can penetrate infinitely better than D'Lo. D'Lo is that guy. This is why I like him, because he's like me, Paul Pierce. We move at our own speed.
Yeah, that's Luka, a good comp, Luka. Actually.
Yeah, but there was a guy, just a crazy reference. There was this guy named Lewis Lloyd. He played at Drake, but he played for the Houston Rockets. And I was talking to a ball player in the NBA. He says, he moves at his own speed. We can't figure out his cadence. But anyways, but J-Mac can – it's a luxury. There's no offense. I'm going to penetrate. That means the defense collapses and he kicks out or hits a layup. I mean, that's such a luxury to have. But I know what you're saying about, I do want to pass first point guard.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's becoming rarer though, Craig, around the league, that's what teams are doing with just more of these Luka Ant type of guys who aren't traditional point guard size.
Yeah, but Ant cannot pass like Luka.
You're right. He can't. But I do think Ant is a good live dribble passer. He can come left, pass with his left hand. He can come right, pass with his right hand. Like, we are going to see Ant become a better passer. Will it be Luka level? Will it be even, is it even going to cross the bar that you're like, okay, that's enough as my point guard? I don't know. But I think we need to leave that option open. It might be. And that's part of the reason why I'm like, okay, I'm kind of okay with next year. If the point guards are more Pat Bev and J-Mac, and you really invest your resources into just getting that power forward, because they might not. I mean, you came onto this at the beginning saying, I want two new starters. They might not be able to do that. Right. And I think if I had to choose between the two, I would focus more on addressing the front court than I would the point guard. They need both. I'm with you.
Right.
But if we're doing it one step at a time, I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. That makes sense. I'm trying to think if there's any other beautiful point I wanted to make. I'll just say this. Jalen Noel is a scorer.
Yeah.
I know he's certainly not a true point guard. I enjoy him. I think he's one of these guys defensively, a little like Beasley, although I guess Beasley improved, where they get down in their stance and they guard the guy, but the guy can still score. There's not strength there defensively. So I guess Jalen's, you know, he's not a great defender, but I do like our team as far as it's fun to watch in the regular season. What I'm thinking about is how do we take the next step?
Yep.
And, we got to get some guys. I mean, I can't believe what Brandon Clark was able to do to us That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's actually the perfect way to say it. That's why I think the addressing the second big is more important too. It's not only that it neuters what Cat can do offensively some by the doubles that it presents. It's also they're the worst rebounding team in the league. They lost both of those playoff games. Brandon Clark had 7 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter, just in the fourth quarter of that game 3. Like,
you know, that was a Dane Moore tweet that I did a screen save and I sent it to a bunch of people. Is that okay? You don't get money for that, do you? But anyways, yeah. So I couldn't believe that. That guy was. We could have drafted him, by the way. And you pointed that out too, Jared Colton.
Yeah. I remember I was at that combine in Chicago, and I went into I was actually following close attention to that draft because it was like 2018, I think, and the Wolves were out very early. And I had this like I was like, oh, I really like Brandon Clark. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I'm like, I'm just gonna follow Brandon Clark around the whole time at the combine. And I got he had the highest vertical leap in the whole thing in the whole combine there. And the shot was funky, still is, but I was just enamored by him coming into that time. And if you remember, that's when they had Dario Saric.
Yeah.
And it was, so a lot of people weren't really considering, because Clark ended up falling to 21. He was supposed to be like in consideration in the lot. The Wolves were 6th or at 11th, what they traded back to once they traded Dario. And I was just like, Brandon Clark. And so that was why in this series, it was just like the extra stab, because they could have had him at 6. They could have had him at 11 they could have traded back up in there. But I always, and Clark's imperfect too. He's like a,
that's the problem. Because he can't shoot beyond 2 feet or 4 feet, I would probably not draft him, but I'm being too picky and I'm being unrealistic with these guys. And I do think it's, this is a reference you're too young to know, but there was a guy named Keith Lee who played, it was called Memphis State. Now it's called Memphis, the college. And he played for Memphis State. And he was a black guy, and I thought he was going to be the black Kevin McHale. He was such a soft touch in college. And he didn't, nothing happened. He didn't make it. And that's when I said, I can't scout. I mean, scouting is so hard. you can't figure these out. And I thought I heard when Cat was drafted early on, prior to that, during the senior year, I thought it was between Jahlil Okafor and Cat, and there was this, I don't know who's going 1 and 2. I heard that. And oh,
that's
my
why
Lord.
I gave up. I wanted Jahlil. So that's why any draft opinion I have now, I'm like, anybody who's pounding on the table, like they know it. I'm like, you don't know it. Like, this is you're right. It is it's an educated crapshoot. That's what the draft is.
Yeah. Before I forget, I have a new podcast coming out.
I was going to get there. Do you have a Twitter? Do you have a Twitter, or you have a secret Twitter that you're?
No, I have no Twitter or no burner account or no secret Twitter. I'm not on Twitter.
Well, then how are you seeing the tweets?
You can search Dane Moore, and I can bookmark it. So I hear. So it's very entertaining during a Wolves game. John Krasinski will make comments like, "Jalen Noel just detonated when he dunked on the Celtics at home on 2 feet with one hand," and then. Obviously, Britt Robson is very entertaining and poetic, and his vocabulary is, you know, impressive, I like to say. So I'm able to do that without being on Twitter.
Okay. So tell us about the Life Gorgeous podcast and the Sir Craig Kilborn YouTube channel. I'm actually curious.
As far as what? Curious as
what it is going to be. I went to, you know, I looked it up yesterday.
Right.
And I'm curious what, like, is it going to be the Instagram on a new platform? Is it going to, is this going to all look like?
It is one of those things where people ask me, you know, what's the show going to be? Well, it's going to be fluid. I don't know. I will say this. Obviously, years ago, I can remember maybe around 2010 or 11. I could have started a podcast years ago. And I was selling my house in the hills because I was tired of being stuck in the hills and I had a mortgage. So I wanted to buy it where I can walk around, which I did. But I bought it in 2013. I'm in the house I am. It's, there's no mortgage and it's, I can walk in the neighborhood to all the restaurants. But I looked at a bunch of houses and one of them had a garage where it was kind of closer to the street. And I said, oh, I could do a podcast in the garage. This house is not set up that way. I don't want anybody in my house. But the fact that COVID happened and everyone's Zooming now, then I said, I guess I can do a podcast. But the other thing was, I wasn't jonesing to do one. I used to joke I wanted to be the last person on earth with a podcast because everyone has one. But in 2018, I joined Instagram kind of for my nieces. And Dane, I've never had more fun in my life. It is, I can show pictures and write little quips and it captures my sensibility. To answer your question, I don't think that can be sustained fully for 45 minutes on a podcast, that aristocratic, whatever, however you want to deconstruct, which I don't do, whatever my sensibility is, I can't really do that. But I am going to talk about, I'm going to talk with my comedic friends, which I will really enjoy. I have writer friends. One is Alex Sulkin. He worked on my show. He works on Family Guy now. He wrote the movie Ted with Seth MacFarlane. These are my buddies, and we'll talk about whatever I want to talk about. And I'll also talk about movies. And Sir Craig Kilborn is just the name of the YouTube channel.
Okay.
And because I watched some YouTube podcasts, and it's a slow growth, but I think the reason I'm doing it is Instagram is so positive and people like, it may be a small group. I may be an acquired taste, but people like my Instagram and they're all these people are saying, please do a podcast. So I say giving back and I say it half jokingly, but I'm going to do it for them. Cause I think they'll get more out of it. I'm going to interview people. I'll give you a guy I'm going to interview because it's who I want to interview that you'll get a kick out of. Ian Eagle. Ian is a friend of mine. We met a couple times, okay. But I texted him the other day. A friend of mine knows him and says, here's his text. We've always been fond of each other, even though we've only met a few times. I love his voice. I love his sense of humor. And I'm going to interview Ian Eagle and I'll talk about whatever I want. I'll try to tie it into the Life Gorgeous, which is food and television shows and sports and music. And I'll have it organized. I'll probably do top five movies of all time with every guest I have. And then I can tell them my top five and it's not a competition, but mine are better. But
can you tell me yours right now?
Yes, I can. And by the way, I've done this for 25 years at dinner. When I'm having dinner, usually I don't like to hold court. I want other people to talk during dinner, so I won't say much. And then eventually someone will say, Craig, you're kind of quiet. So then I'll do the top five movies around the table. And my father would say, you're controlling it. You're controlling the dinner. I said, I'm not controlling. I just want to be entertained. So I always tell people, and I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Uh-oh.
I want you to do your five. And I say this. People say, oh, I can't. I said, just do five. You can change it 5 minutes later. You just put five and just do four. Can you get, because I like to see if there's an overlap. You know what I'm
saying? I have to go first?
Yeah, because I don't want you to be influenced by me or intimidated by, I'm just kidding. But I already know you're going to say.
Benchwarmers?
No, I was going to think of a basketball movie, but I'm not a big sports movie guy.
Me neither.
You know, I like Hoosiers, but you know, anyway.
So whenever I have this conversation, it always ends up being like five I've watched recently.
Yeah.
And that's not what the question is, but you're putting me on the spot. So this is my pushback. I think Dumb and Dumber is my favorite movie of childhoodish, like teenage, that
right.
Dumb and Dumber and Rounders with Matt Damon and Edward Norton. Yeah. Those are always like, you know, they're not the greatest cinematography ever of that sort of way. But like, there's, I have movies like soft spot movies like that. I rewatched St. Vincent again last week.
Right.
And that is a movie of the recent that I loved. That's three. How about you do three and I'll think of two more.
Okay. And it isn't, it is what move, it is what moves you, you know, the movies you mentioned, they meant a lot to you. Am I allowed, because you're not a beautiful woman, am I allowed to ask you your age?
Yeah, I'm 32 years old.
Okay. I was thinking
so I was
you might
born
be a couple
the
years,
year couple. The wolves were born.
Oh.
1989.
I thought you were going to say I'm 32, but I was born in 1970. No. But anyways, so I've seen a lot of older movies. And so when I do my movies, a lot of them are classic movies. But... And I'm a Hitchcock fan, so I'm only going to name one Alfred Hitchcock movie, and I'll name North by Northwest with Cary Grant. There are a whole bunch of great Hitchcock movies, and I've seen a lot of them. In fact, what throws people off is if I said to you, the three movies you mentioned, if I said to you, I haven't seen any of them, I just know of them. I haven't seen Rounders. St. Vincent is the one with Bill Murray, correct?
Yes.
I have not seen it, and I'm the biggest Bill Murray fan there is. I haven't seen it yet. So The Graduate, Dustin Hoffman, great movie, one of my favorites. A movie called Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. There's a movie from the 50s, Billy Wilder, called The Sunset Boulevard. So that's four. I think that's four. But here's one that is a little more contemporary from 2004, maybe 2005, a movie called Sideways.
Yeah,
and that was with the guys going up, you know, drinking the wine, but having issues with women and relationship issues. Very funny movie. So those are my current five. I added Sideways in the last couple of years.
So does it constantly like evolve for you?
Like it can, but I don't always have Sunset Boulevard on there. But I always have The Graduate on there. Have you ever seen, and it's okay, don't be embarrassed if you haven't. Have you seen any of those movies?
I actually took film classes when I was in college. I was an English minor, and I took as many film classes as I could to read less and watch more movies. So I think, what was the first one, North by Northwest?
North by Northwest. There are a bunch of great ones. There's Strangers on a Train. There's Psycho. A lot of people like Psycho. It's very good. I'm obsessed with Hitchcock, so I've seen all of them. But North by Northwest, I say. Vertigo is very good. They're all,
Yeah, that would be the other four I've seen. Sideways, I actually rewatched maybe during the pandemic. I feel like I watched so many movies over again. You know, I watched this weekend, I watched Forrest Gump. I did a lot. So I'm weird with movies where when I was a kid, I would never watch a movie twice. Like that was, I mean, not even a kid, like honestly, up until like maybe 10 years ago, I was like, well, I've already seen it. Like, why would I rewatch it? So that always was like, cause you know, everybody has this conversation with their friends. This was always the stumbling block for me. And so my favorite movie, why I say Dumb and Dumber and Rounders, like those are two of the movies that don't bother me at all to rewatch. They're like enjoyable, but even other movies that I've, you know, seen once and loved, it's like, it's just, I'd rather get into something I've never seen before.
My brother is the same way. I have an older brother. I always like to say he was lone valedictorian of his graduating class of 500 down at Hastings. He's a software engineer. He was into science fiction. He's Spock-like. He was introverted, not as aggressive or confident as myself. And he felt, I've seen that movie, and if I watch it again, I'm wasting my time. And so my wife, when I met her, she really liked Breakfast at Tiffany's. Hmm. And I said, how often have you seen it? And she goes, oh, I don't know. I put it on when I'm doing cleaning or when I'm vacuuming. I mean, I watch it over and over again, like the way I listen to music over and over again. So there are movies, I'll tell you a couple movies that are not, I go by the rating on IMDb, all the Hitchcock movies over an 8 rating. So here's some movies that are down around the 7s that are not, they're not great movies. They're movies the way you like Dumb and Dumber. I like some of these espionage or some of these mysteries. So the No Way Out with Kevin Costner, I just watch it a lot. It's 7.1. There's one that should be a 7 or 7.1, and it's 6.8, which is wrong. But I watched The Firm with Tom Cruise and Gene Hackman over and over again. It's so relaxing.
Yeah, they're like blanket movies. You know, it's just like it's the comfort of or everybody does that. I feel like with The Office, right, where they like turn The Office or like they have their go to Schitt's Creek. I feel like a lot of people have that now, where it's like maybe it's a show that came out like 5 years ago, but they're cleaning the house or they're doing, and it's they already know what happens, so they don't need to be like dialed in on it, right?
Yeah. What's funny is when I do this podcast, I guarantee you, because I'm gonna bond with Ian Eagle, I'm gonna bond with different people, and I guarantee you I'm gonna repeat myself over and over again because I think it's important. Because I'm gonna tell you now, when you mention The Office, so like my nieces are they're one's out of college, one's in college, they're obsessed with The American Office, and I watched it. And I know it's funny. So this is where I'm weird. When I worked. I was a 14-year run of Monterey, California, ESPN, New York City, The Daily Show, and then CBS LA. I didn't watch a lot of stuff because I would unwind and go to dinner or watch the NBA. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't watch Seinfeld. And my dad says, you got to watch Seinfeld. And I had already seen Jerry do stand-up in LA before he did Seinfeld. And I know Seinfeld's the greatest. After I quit my show, I started watching sitcoms, and I had interviewed these people.
Yeah.
My favorite sitcom of all time, not even close, is Frasier. Frasier. I had interviewed Kelsey. I don't know if you've ever seen Frasier. There's an actress, Jane Lees, and she plays Daphne Moon. I had interviewed her on my show a bunch. I watched Frasier. I fell in love with Daphne Moon, and I'm kind of like, I'm glad I didn't see this. I would have been fawning all over her as a guest, you know. She was a British girl and she was a dancer and she was so
you wouldn't cute. You wouldn't watch the show before you interviewed people?
No, I had to interview Halle Berry and they said she'll only do it if we're gonna send you the DVD of Monsters Ball and she'll only do it if you watch it. So I watched it and we talked about the movie and in the interview. And my dad said, don't ever watch a movie before that. It was not that exciting to hear you talk about it with them. Because on a talk show, it's better if they say, you talk a little bit about the movie, this is what it's about. But Billy Bob, you know, we would go have lunch and then he loved us Reuben sandwiches. And we like, it's an anecdotal story is more entertaining than breaking down the powerful scene that they had. It was not good television. So, I sometimes had to go see the actor would say, you have to go see the movie. They'd give me a private screening of a Clint Eastwood movie before I interviewed him. And, but yeah, I didn't see a lot of those. Is that weird?
It kind of does make sense because if you had, then you would be bogged down with the movie. And as the consumer watching you talk to the person, honestly, I'm more interested in just hearing you two talk about what you did at lunch. Or what his life is, or what your life is in the movie. Like, I'm either going to see the movie or I'm not going to see the movie. You know, like it's probably not going to move the needle that much.
Right. And I was, when I got to interview Clint because I had actually had dinner with him a couple of times because I worked in Salinas, Monterey, Santa Cruz, the 110 market doing local TV, but I lived in Carmel and he was the mayor of Carmel in 85. I was there in the early 90s. And when I went to ESPN, there was a lady friend of mine who was a news anchor at the other station locally, but we were friends and she married Clint Eastwood and she was married to him for like 18 or 19 years, Dina. And Dina was the one who got him on my CBS show. And he hadn't even done Letterman yet. But in the interview, I said, cause he's 6'3", he's 6'3" or 6'4".
Yeah.
And I knew he grew up in Oakland. And I said, so, did you play ball? And he goes, no, I didn't play basketball. And I go, would you swim or something? Yeah. He goes, I didn't play sports. And I was crestfallen. I go, you gotta be kidding me. And he said, I'll be whatever you want me to be. Like he saw how disappointed I was. I'll say whatever you want, you know, because it was very funny. But yeah, that's more interesting to people. We also did a 5-question with him where we said, and finally, Clint, I want you to squint because it's sunny. And then I want you to squint because you're angry. We wanted to see the difference in the squinting because that was all his acting was squinting, you know.
Totally.
I'm a big Clint fan. I love Clint.
Craig, well, can we do this again later this summer?
Absolutely. Let's do it when somewhere where after the draft and before the season, and we'll see what we're at with D'Lo and all that fun stuff.
That's what's going to be interesting is like we're so right now in the it's just the fodder time, right? It's conversations like this one where we're just throwing stuff out there and it's fun. I fans love that. I love doing it, but what always happens is it a reality that we didn't even envision for good or for bad is what always ends up happening, right? There's too many moving parts to predict everything. And
yes,
go ahead.
And a last note I wanted to say about the Wolves. I didn't predict that the bench would be this good this year or the team defense would be this good this year. I had no, because I thought the team defense was for years, even with Tibbs. I mean, I think the starting
disaster.
Five with Tibbs was good. Yeah. But so it was a magical year. One of my favorite years, maybe my favorite year. I said the honeymoon's over, pressure on them next year. Let's see how they do. So it was great talking to you, buddy.
That's what's fun, man. The process of good to great in anything is hard, but you know, rewarding or enjoyable at least along the way. So I really appreciate you taking all the time. Again, for all of those listening, this is where I normally plug people's Twitter handles. Craig is not on Twitter, but the Life Gorgeous
Instagram,
podcast.
Instagram. Mr. Craig Kilborn Instagram.
It's
and
Mr.
Then the
Craig
YouTube channel.
The Instagram is Mr. Craig Kilborn.
Yeah, Mr. Craig Kilborn and then Sir Craig Kilborn on YouTube. I initially had mine as Sir Craig and then I on Insta and then I changed it, but I might go back. But anyways. Yeah, Mr. Craig Kilborn on Instagram, Sir Craig Kilborn YouTube channel, just joined last week. And then the podcast is coming this summer.
I'm looking forward to it, man. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to do it and for caring about the Wolves. It's fun to have you on the bandwagon here, and we'll do it again sometime soon.
Thanks, brother. Nice meeting you, man.
You too. He's Craig Kilborn. I'm Dane. I'll be back with Britt Robson later this week to have a similar conversation probably. Maybe I'll ask Britt what his top 5 movies are as well. Thanks again, Craig. Until then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like no